Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
It's in the Scottish Government's interest not just to protect, obviously, public services, but also to show further divergence from the rest of the UK.
It does show the sort of strain that the market is under this winter.
The other factor playing into all this is Brexit. Neither political party will even contemplate relaxing EU migration. This is the elephant in the room, isn't it?
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Caroline Hepke. Welcome to the programme. In a word, sleaze. Is it back? Rishi Sunak needs perhaps a pretty big dustpan and brush right now, I'd argue. He might not have made some of the messes, and we'll unpack them all one by one throughout the show, but he may have to end up cleaning them up, and that's going to be quite tricky.
Yeah, I think it's particularly unfortunate timing with what I think is the biggest of these scandals, which is Nadeem Zahawi and the alleged underpaying of a very, very large sum of tax, because this is the time of year that everybody's doing their tax returns, or at least not everybody, a large, many millions of people
are doing... Are you being pinged as aggressively as I am being pinged by HMRC, Revenue and Customs, to get that tax form in by the 31st of January? Yes, I think the timing couldn't be worse.
Yeah, I mean, I spent my weekend doing this wretched, doing this wretched form, and I think a lot of people also did, under the implicit threat that if I didn't get it in, I would get fined. And if I didn't do it correctly, I could get into a lot of trouble. So, yeah, it is very bad timing.
Yes, and I also think that this word around careless, that was in the statement that Nadeem Zahawi made. You know, I think a lot of people will be wondering, well, if I get my tax return wrong, or I, you know, don't fill it in correctly, is that going to be an excuse? I mean, obviously, my advice is don't bother trying.
And they're not known for being very forgiving generally, are they, HMRC?
Well, actually, globally, I think that depends. I mean, if you've ever had to fill in, as I have had to do, a form for the IRS in the United States, oh my goodness, that is draconian. And also, it's completely impossible to do American taxes yourself, really. You have to give it to a...
Because it's complicated.
It's so complicated, whereas at least... I feel quite grateful that the HMRC system in the UK, you can kind of DIY, you can do it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually pleasantly surprised at how simple the process was, actually, although there's a lot of it and it's boring, but it isn't, you know, it's doable, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, so the Prime Minister, in a bit of a deluge of scandals, not all of his own making, and he's also, of course, today trying to cut through with his own agenda, Rishi Sunak, namely looking at pay deals to avert February strike action. Today's another big strike day. Bloomberg's UK government reporter Alex Wickham is with us to chew over all of these stories. Alex, loads of things to discuss. The tax issues of the former Chancellor, the Tory party chairman Nadeem Zahawi. Let's start there. Does he resign? What is the wider fallout from this in terms of standards?
I think he's in a pretty tricky position, and it sort of depends what else comes out really in the days and maybe weeks ahead. At the moment, we've sort of seen, you know, reports from journalists about what Nadeem Zahawi has supposedly done and not done with his taxes, broadly, that he, you know, didn't pay several millions of pounds of taxes and then came to an arrangement with HMRC to eventually do so. But we've only really heard a kind of vague explanation from Nadeem Zahawi himself about what went on. And then we've only really seen, you know, newspaper reports and journalism on what supposedly went on. We haven't got the final you know, here is the full truth broken down by, you know, an independent investigator, which supposedly is what we'll get now, as Rishi Sunak announces an investigation by his independent ethics advisor into Nadeem Zahawi. So, you know, that could be tricky, to say the least, if that investigation finds that, yes, Nadeem Zahawi, you know, did not act with the accountability and integrity that you would expect of a senior politician in his approach to his personal finances. That would make his position extremely difficult, I think. And it, as you say, it's that theme that keeps coming back in British politics at the moment of one rule for them and another rule for us.
But I suppose, I mean, the question, again, I think, Alex, you lay out the case quite nicely that at the moment it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of journalism, a lot of journalists asking questions, and the facts of the situation are still quite muddy. But, and yet, the whole thrust seems to be, does the pressure of the questions force Zahawi to step down? I mean, an investigation is something much more long-running.
That's what the government's plan is. They're kicking it into the long grass, right, by announcing this investigation. You know, we've seen with Partygate, with allegations of bullying against cabinet ministers, and et cetera, that have happened over the last year. These investigations take months, and it's definitely a political strategy by Downing Street to say, oh, look, well, we've announced an investigation. What more do you want us to do? Of course, he shouldn't resign while the investigation is ongoing. Meanwhile, you know, the heat comes out of the story and journalists move on to something else. That is definitely the plan for number 10. It is the playbook that they've used again and again whenever one of their senior ministers is in a difficult situation. The problem is that Rishi Sunak has got multiple issues with multiple cabinet ministers now mounting up. He's got issues with Suella Braverman and how she handled the migrant crisis and issues with her emails. He's got Dominic Raab, the Justice Secretary, and allegations of bullying or you know, poor treatment of junior staff that's being investigated as well. And now his party chairman is under investigation over his taxes. You know, you can see a scenario. Eventually, these investigations have to conclude. I think probably, unless some shocking revelation comes out in the next 24, 48 hours, I think Nadeem Zahawi, just like Suella Braverman and Dominic Raab, will limp on. But eventually, these investigations have to conclude. And if they, you know, if they find that the integrity that Rishi Sunak claims is the driving force behind his government, if they find that some of that integrity was missing in either any of those three cases, it's going to be pretty tough for any three of those politicians to survive.
Alex, how much of this stuff resonates in the real world? The Nadeem Zahawi stuff, do you think that is breaking through with people as they talk about politics in out there?
I think on tax, on the one hand, you know, tax is very complicated. Who knows the ins and outs of it? Probably, certainly not me. But on the flip side of it, everybody does understand the general principle that you should pay taxes. And, you know, it certainly looks like he did not pay millions of pounds of tax, which clearly was owed, because otherwise he wouldn't have paid it now and come to that settlement. And ultimately, I think people do understand that. And it just, it feeds into this narrative, you know. With Partygate, the crime wasn't so shocking in terms of having you know, a pizza and a bottle of beer, but it was the principle that, you know, the government tells everyone to do one thing and then does something else that made people so angry. And this fits into the same thing. You know, Nadeem Zahawi may well have paid all his taxes now. He may have come to an agreement with HMRC where they, you know, agreed it was careless or whatever. But the issue is, I think a lot of people looking at this will rightly say, as you pointed out, if I don't pay my taxes, then, you know, the government comes after me, HMRC come after me.
Yes.
Why is it that senior politicians can cook up these deals and seemingly get away with it?
Yeah.
I think that is a damaging thing for Rishi Sunak, especially when his big pitch to the country is, I'm not like the rest of them, I'm not like the ones that came before, I'm a decent guy. Well, you know, his government isn't looking that way this morning.
No, and so is Downing Street missing an ethics advisor? I mean, Sunak's own agenda, you know, he was meant to be talking about mental health today. His own agenda is being drowned out amidst the sort of ethics issues.
yeah, this is becoming, you know, a real problem for Downing Street strategically, as they just can't seem to forge any form of a positive narrative about their government. And, you know, Rishi Sunak, to be fair to him, he's inherited a very difficult situation. The polling was terrible. The economy was pretty terrible when he took over. And, you know, he saw his job largely to steady the ship and prevent total calamity for the country and for the Tory party. Fine. But that is a very low bar. And Tory MPs will expect more than that from Rishi Sunak and Downing Street. Mm-hmm. They will expect much more of a positive narrative. Here's what we're doing to fix the country's on, you know, myriad problems that they've got. And then again, you know, it showed that the government is more competent and more decent than what came before. And when issues like this dominate the news, and there are multiple stories affecting the Tories today, you know, when this is the story that's at the top of the BBC News or whatever that most people are looking at as they come home from work, it just feeds into the narrative that everything you hear about this government is negative. And, okay, you know, That is tough for them to win votes.
Yes, and Boris Johnson back in the news, dashing off to Kyiv just as he's back in the news over this loan business, which also involves the BBC. Just a quick question on strikes. You mentioned in your piece today that a government official says that some deals are close with rail workers and firefighters. What's the latest ahead of next week's big coordinated strike day?
Well, it's really crunch time. This is what the government should be focusing on today. And Rishi Sunak is having to deal with, you know, largely political issues about fleets. But what the government needs to be thinking about is how to prevent this horrendous week coming up at the beginning of February, when, you know, just about everybody in the public sector goes on strike. You know, February the 1st is a big strike day, and then February the 6th for the NHS is a big strike day. And, you know, yes, we're hearing that talks are going, you know, quite well with the rail unions at the moment. Firefighters, although firefighters haven't particularly been one of the main strikers at all here. But the real question is, you know, can they make more headway with particularly nurses and ambulance workers ahead of that week? And the clock is ticking. And, you know, every day that passes, we are not appearing to be any closer to a deal with the NHS workers, which is really crucial for the government. And, you know, Tory MPs are saying, and ministers, you know, look, a deal, it's inevitable they're going to have to do a deal eventually. They can't just have strikes all year. It would be a political disaster, let alone a disaster for you know, people who are ill and need ambulances. So what on earth are they going to do, and why don't they get a move on and meet them in the middle? And you do feel that it is crushingly inevitable that will happen at some point. But okay, that is where ministers and Tory MPs are expecting Rishi Sunak to make headway over the next 7 days or so.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education, by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Now, I know an individual who's been turning off their lights, their heating, using the microwave, being very careful about the oven for ages, Ewan. I'm pointing my finger at you. I laugh, but actually, you're one of the few people channeling a bit of Martin Lewis. You know, you really do think about it. I mean, I think that's great in terms of energy saving. It's also very green. Why have you done it for so long, I suppose, is my question.
Yeah, I'm quite nerdy about this. So I've been turning off my appliances in the evening peak for years, and I'm really pleased that there's now some sort of campaign to do it. Now, I don't do it to save money, because until this latest scheme, they didn't, you know, you didn't
do that much.
It didn't do that, exactly. But I do it for environmental reasons, and without sounding like too much of a goody two shoes. For me, it's a very easy way to save carbon emissions. I just do my laundry and I do my dishwasher in the middle of the night, rather than at 5:30 or 6:30 p.m. when all the dirtiest power stations are online. I do it at night time, where more power comes from renewables. And I encourage my friends to do this as well, because it's kind of like an easy win, isn't it? It's not sticking your dishes on at 4 a.m. with the timer. I don't get up and put it on physically at 4 a.m. obviously.
Yeah,
I have a timer. It's, you know, it's a very easy way to do something.
I think it's great. I think it's a no-brainer. And frankly, I think because things have gotten so difficult with energy prices, it's something that lots of people are thinking about. And we're also in the middle of a cold snap, certainly in London and the southeast. So it has the energy grid now paying people to do what you've been doing for ages, which is to cut your usage. Plus, Citizens Advice hammering home the extent to which customers are being, who are struggling perhaps, are being forced onto these prepayment meters. Here to talk all about this is Bloomberg's Rachel Morrison, who leads our coverage of gas, power and renewables. Rachel, welcome to Bloomberg UK Politics. It's good to speak to you. This does feel like a bit of a crunch day. You've now got, you know, it has been quite a warm winter most of the time. Now you've got this cold snap, and you have companies deciding that they're going to pay people to switch off. How exactly does that work? And do you think, more importantly, it's really going to help with the UK's energy usage?
Hello. Yes, I think that today is one of those days that the tools that National Grid, the electricity system operator has are sort of possibly being used for the first time. So they say people shouldn't worry. These are tools they have in their toolkit to try to help alleviate supply crunches like the one we have this evening. However, it does lead people to be a little bit unsettled when they hear things like people are being asked to use less energy during a certain two-hour window this evening, the one that Ewan was talking about, where it's sort of peak demand and we know that people come home from work and they need to do things at home that use energy. So this system is only run by a few suppliers. It's been in a test phase so far because National Grid didn't really know what the uptake would be like, because it's quite difficult to work out that point where it is enough money that people care to do it, that they're going to save. So if it's too little, they just won't bother. So they've been trying to get that point right. And tonight, we think from 5 o'clock, it looks like those users that have, those households that have agreed with their energy supplier that they want to take part in this, will be asked to cut back. And National Grid's looking for just over 300 megawatts, which is about the size of a small power station. And that's people not doing things this evening and then saving some money on their bill, which will help the electricity system stay in balance, so keep supply and demand in balance. And yeah, we're interested to see if it works and to see how much people save and to see how much it costs the grid versus other things that they could do.
Because 300 megawatts is not a great deal, is it? And I do wonder if we had a national campaign to say to people, please try not to use power between 5 and 7pm. And you said that's everybody, I'm not talking about just a small sample, then that could potentially save a lot of power, couldn't it? You could take a lot of capacity offline during that peak if we just said to people, just try and shift things a little bit if you can.
Yeah, that's something that the UK government has held back from. But, you know, there has since been a small, I would call it, campaign to try to get people to be aware of this. And I think that this trial is probably a step on the way to that. This is something that is actually really useful. People can do, especially when you have an electric vehicle. You don't want to charge that when it's expensive. So I think this is getting people used to the idea, and then they will try to roll it out more widely.
Yeah, because look, the Europeans are much further down this road than we are in terms of trying to actively manage by, you know, sending messages on people's phones, you know, to get them not to turn the kettle on, etc. Look, I do feel a bit kind of wasteful, a bit capitalist, sort of saying, oh, well, I haven't been thinking about this terribly much. But actually, it should be a much more normal part of the conversation about how much energy we're using as households. Yes, that's been forced by the cost of it. And this is sort of another very big issue. And this is much more of a political issue, isn't it? The Energy Minister, Grant Shapps, has vowed to name and shame the worst offenders amongst the energy companies that are shunting people onto prepayment meters, customers sometimes who are unwilling to do that. I was staggered, Rachel, that there are 4 million customers in the UK on prepayment meters. So, you know, that kind of whole debate around eat versus heat, well, some people, it's, you know, there's no choice. You have to put the money, you know, on the card.
Yes, and I think that idea of a prepayment meter, to some people, they don't understand what it is. And it's a sort of pay-and-go meter in your house where if you need to have electricity or gas, you go to the newsagent or a shop and you top up a card, and then that gives you £10 or £20 that you can use until that runs out. So what that means is if you don't top up, you don't have any energy. Whereas, you know, for us who have direct debits and things like that, then that means that, you know, if you don't pay a bill, you will still get supply. And although in the context of the UK, 4 million isn't necessarily, you know, a huge number of people, what it is, it tends to be more vulnerable and lower income households. So when you might get one is if you haven't paid your bill for a long time, or your supplier sees that it's difficult to get the money from you, they'll say, OK, that's it. We're not sending you any more bills that you're not paying. We're putting in a prepayment meter. So the suppliers say they only do it where they really need to, because it's a risk for them that they won't be able to get, you know, the money that they're owed from people. However, when they go into houses and you know, install them where either the customer doesn't want it, or perhaps these are vulnerable people choosing between heating and eating, that's kind of seen at this time in the cost of living crisis as, you know, a sort of quite unkind and unfair thing to do, which is why Ofgem and the government are looking at those numbers.
Mm, yeah, 600,000 people have been put on these over the last year. I was really surprised by that number. I just wanted to ask you about another leg of the National Grid strategy for when there is a potential shortage of power, and that's firing up these coal-fired plants. When I went to bed last night, we were told that three of them were being put on standby, and then just a few hours ago, they said that they've been taken off standby. What's the story with that?
So these units are kept in a reserve, and the UK wants to phase out coal by 2024. And because those power stations were getting ready to do that and some of them closing early, the government asked National Grid to pay them to be around this winter to make sure that if we need them, we have them available. And yesterday, National Grid looked at the peak this evening and said, right, we might need these coal stations. Let's get them warmed up. Let's get them ready. And then the situation changed, you know, there was going to be more electricity around than they thought, or peak demand looked lower. So they said, we don't need them. However, they're sort of ready if that needs to happen either tonight or tomorrow night.
OK, so then big picture and how this affects politics in terms of UK green investment, you know, trying to get better forms of energy, greener forms of energy. How is the UK doing?
Well, what this situation shows is that we really have a problem in the UK when there isn't much wind. So it's cold, but also there's very little wind generation around Monday night and Tuesday night. So as the UK builds out more offshore wind, you know, we're trying to get 50 gigawatts by the end of this decade. We need something to back it up when it's not windy. You know, everybody knows it's not windy all the time. We can predict it. So we need something in place when it's not, so we can focus on those clean forms of energy. But what I'm sort of hearing from people is a worry about the backup and what we use. And at the minute, we've got coal as a backup, and we don't want to continue that for much longer. So we do need the Prime Minister and, you know, the Energy Secretary to have a good look at this and figure out what they're going to use to plug that gap, because it's only going to get worse.
Rachel, lovely stuff. Thanks so much for joining us. That's Bloomberg's Rachel Morrison. Leads our coverage of gas, power and renewable energy.
Yeah, it's still the difficulties of getting the right energy mix for the UK. Well, speaking of which, the Labour leader Keir Starmer is going to be visiting Octopus Energy apparently this morning, pledging a £700 million grant for small businesses to invest in green tech and save on their fuel bills. So this is kind of Labour and their green pitch, and yeah, talking to Octopus today.
Yeah, and ambulance workers are out on strike across much of England this morning in London, Yorkshire, the North West, North East and several other regions. 16,000 workers on street strike. This is a bigger ambulance strike than the one we saw before. And of course, you know, it is a very crucial part of the NHS ahead of that coordinated strike action next week.
Yeah, there's also a couple of things that I want to mention that no doubt we will be coming back to tomorrow, which is that the HMRC boss, Jim Harrer, is up before the Public Accounts Committee later on this week, going to be talking about tax compliance. So I think it depends what happens in the Nadeem Zahawi story, the sorts of questions that Harrer is going to be asked. We were talking about separately, you know, the issue with HMRC sort of struggling to recover pandemic era payments that were accessed fraudulently. So there'll be big questions for Harrer.
Well, that's it for us today. Don't forget, if you like the programme, to subscribe to our podcast and to give it 5 stars wherever you listen.
This episode was produced by James Wilcock. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Ewan Potts. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.